o'clock in Lebanon's parliament. Dennis Martin reporting, USA Radio Network News.
Okay, everybody, let's play Who Wants to Volunteer in Your Community? We'll start with Trenise from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Wait, hold on. I didn't say I wanted to volunteer.
Ah, but you will, Trenise, because we know how much you can't stand your little brother.
That's true.
So we're giving you a little sister.
A what?
And here's your bratty little brother to tell you more.
You know you always wanted a little sister instead of me?
Yeah.
Well, you can get a little sister when you volunteer in the Big Brother Big Sister program down at the community center.
Yeah, what he said.
Yeah, you two can go shopping together, see movies.
And stay far away from me.
You said that right.
Word.
But I like the little sister thing.
To find more mentoring programs and other ways to volunteer in your community, log on to teensvolunteer.org. And join us next time for another episode of Who Wants to Volunteer in Your Community? Do what you like to do. Volunteer. A public service message brought to you by the USA Freedom Corps, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. In 2 hours, just under 2 hours, in fact, the President of the United States will announce his nominee to replace Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. It is widely rumored that's going to be Edith Clement, the judge of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, but we do not know that yet. And there will be plenty of time, I assure you. Her record will be gone over extensively by Republicans and Democrats. There'll be plenty of time to discuss her, if it is her. It may be somebody else. So before we get to the nominee in an hour and 53 minutes, I've invited on the show Jim Greenfield of the Jim Greenfield Show, the show that precedes mine on the Talk Radio Network, to discuss basic judicial philosophies. And if you've been listening to Jim Greenfield's show in the last hour, you have heard we are in mid-debate. Or perhaps, as he puts it, maybe it's more of a discussion. What's interesting about my debate with Jim Greenfield is that we largely agree on the basic principles. We disagree on their application. Both Jim and I claim to be fairly strict constructionists, depending on how you define that. But both of us respect the text of the Constitution and think the Constitution's text should be applied. And then the question is, well, can that meaning change over time? And I have a larger contention, one that I know Jim doesn't really care to address, but I do want to mention at some point on this show, which is that my biggest problem with people like Justice Scalia is not what they say they believe, but what they actually do. I believe, and I can give you examples, and I will give examples in this hour, that Justice Scalia specifically is a big hypocrite. He claims to be strict constructionist. He claims to be states' rights. He claims to care about original intent. And then when you look at his actual rulings, you find he's following the conservative agenda. It's my contention that even though the right wing claims they don't want judges legislating from the bench, it is precisely that they do want. They are supporting judicial activists, and that the Rehnquist Court is a far more judicially activist court, legislating from the bench, not respecting the will of the majority, than the Warren Court of the 1960s ever was. So I want to get on to that as well. But first, let me introduce my guest, talk radio host, lawyer, and a scholar in his own right, Jim Greenfield. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark. I would like to make one distinction in something you just said, though.
Sure, go ahead.
There's a difference between legislating from the bench and what was the other expression?
Judicial activism.
Yeah, legislating from the bench is not the same thing as striking down unconstitutional legislation. Legislating from the bench means that you're ignoring what the Constitution says, and the judges are just kind of making it up as they go along.
Right. That's what I think the right-wing judges are doing.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't. You're talking in general abstract.
Well, let's get some specifics.
Examples. I don't know.
Fair enough. Let's talk about
how we can. Let's
talk about
right
specifics. I can talk about old news or new news. Let's talk about a way that the court, I think, has been wrong for more than 100 years. I want to see if you agree with me, Jim. It has to do with the 14th Amendment, the United States Constitution, one of the Civil War amendments, one of my favorites. And, folks, I want you to imagine how it is here. You got Jim. Where are you, Jim, located? I don't even know that.
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Okay, Jim is in Portland, Oregon, and he's got his copy of the Constitution well-worn in his fingers. I'm here in Washington, D.C. I got my copy of the Constitution well-worn, and it kind of imagine it like a duel here. We've got Constitutions drawn, the pen is mightier than the sword, and we're battling it out. But I'm going to flip in my Constitution to Amendment 14, one of my favorites, a post-Civil War amendment, which says that basically all persons born or naturalized in the United States have certain rights, including equal protection of the law, life, liberty, due process, and so forth. Now, the Supreme Court, ever since the late 1890s, and what I think is one of the worst decisions of all time that keeps going on, suggested that the word person means corporation. That, in fact, person, which most of us know is people that, you know, are alive and have blood running in their veins and can think and talk, and corporation, a legal fiction which states create to help build commerce, which they have every right to create, but they also, in my mind, have every right to regulate, that somehow corporations are persons and somehow corporations have rights under the Constitution. I argue that corporations have zero constitutional rights. Do they have rights? Sure they do. Legislatures create rights for them, and they can take away those rights. But corporations, per se, are a mere legal fiction. They are not persons, and they shouldn't be treated as persons. And I want to know, Jim Greenfield, if you agree.
Well, you're making a very generalized statement, and I'd really have to you know, I've never really given the issue much thought, unless you gave me a specific factual context.
I'll tell you this.
Now, would you think that other types of, you know, basically a corporation is a relationship between a set of people, and would you say that other associations of people have no rights also?
No, I think an association of people where people come together and can fully vote and choose their direction, for example, unions, labor unions, or political organizations, people like the National Rifle Association, who I disagree with. When people come together and they can choose their leadership, that's one thing. But you and I both know, Jim, that's not how corporations work. The shareholders have virtually no power, and so...
Well, I don't know why you say that. The shareholders have virtually all power.
No, they really don't. It's kind of a separate issue, but we're going to come back with more
of... You give me a specific...
The specific example of the corporations I will give you, Jim, when we come back from break. But I do want to talk about, in general, constitutionally, are corporations even in the Constitution? Answer, no. They have no constitutional rights. So why does this court give them that? We'll be right back after this.
The legacy of the great communicator lives on in his accomplishments and his spoken word. And now you can own a treasury of the great speeches of Ronald Wilson Reagan on DVD. We're offering 12 memorable speeches from Ronald Reagan's remarkable presidency, starting with his nomination speech all the way to his farewell to the nation in 1988. Included is his memorable speech at the Berlin Wall.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
This DVD collection in full color is the best way to remember Ronald Reagan and share his wit, charm, and the clarity of his challenge to all Americans. Order the stirring collection of Reagan speeches for just $19.95 plus shipping and handling. Go to www.reagancollection.com.
Order online or by mail at the address reagancollection.com.
Okay, everybody, it's time for another game of Who Wants to Volunteer in Your Community? Let's go to Ella in Santa Monica, California.
Hey, wait, I don't want to volunteer.
Well, I have a feeling you'll change your mind when you realize how much fun volunteering really can be.
But
in fact, Ella, we've asked your entire algebra class here to tell you more.
Wait, you did what?
Take it away, class.
Hey, Ella, we've been noticing you lately in algebra class.
You have?
I'm feeling some love here.
Yeah, and we were thinking that you should start tutoring people because you're all, like, smart and stuff.
I should?
Yeah, you free tonight?
Go for it!
I should.
They love you, Ella!
Well, sounds like we have another happy volunteer.
That's me.
To find out ways you can volunteer in your community, log on to teensvolunteer.org and join us next time for another episode of Who Wants to Volunteer in Your Community? Do what you like to do. Volunteer. A public service message brought to you by the USA Freedom Corps, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. In an hour and 45 minutes, the President of the United States will nominate a new justice for the United States Supreme Court. And when that comes, you know, we will be on the Inside Scoop talking about him or her in detail. But we don't know quite who that is yet. So before we even get there, I think it's important to discuss general judicial philosophies. My guest, fellow talk show host Jim Greenfield, and I both claim to be strict constructionists. We each have our Constitution in hand. We're both lawyers. We both claim to be true to the letter and spirit of the Constitution, but we disagree. He comes down on more of the conservative side, I on more on the liberal side. But what's interesting is we really both feel that we're being true to the text of the Constitution. Now, before the break, we were talking about constitutionally whether corporations are persons or not. I'm a textualist. I'm a strict textualist. When I read the word person, I don't see the word corporation. Does that mean the CEO of a corporation has no rights? No, he has the same rights that any person has. Does that mean the corporation has the same rights as people? Of course not. Can corporations vote? Of course not. I think corporations have zero constitutional rights. They can certainly have rights, any rights that a state is willing to give them. Jim, you disagree.
I've never heard of a corporation going to jail.
There's criminal law.
The people who are shareholders in the corporation, the people who are directors of the corporation, the people who are managers or employees of the corporation certainly have rights.
As individuals, yes.
Okay, so now the question would be, if you gave actual context, then I might be able to say,
okay,
well,
corporations giving political donations. If there's a limit that each individual can give $2,000 to a candidate, can they then join into 1,000 corporations and then give $2 million? I say no. I say that the limit's
an
individual.
No, I think they can. I think anybody should be able, person or any organization should be able to give whatever contributions they want they want.
But, Jim, we're trying to distinguish between legislation and the Constitution. If you have a legislative body and that legislative body says people as individuals have these rights, but corporations don't have the same rights as these individuals, you would agree with me that there's no constitutional provision that says that corporations have constitutional rights.
Constitutional provision says that Congress has the right to prohibit corporations from making contributions?
Well, that's a different issue. I mean, it has to do with – I mean, it's a different issue. Let me just deal with my question.
Has the power to prevent you from doing something.
No, but here's my question.
The power to do it,
Does constitutionally, freedom of speech, for example, I don't think corporations have any right to freedom of speech. If you want to give them freedom of speech, fine, but they don't have a right to it.
Where does the government get these? You know that Alexander Hamilton didn't even want to have a Bill of Rights because he said, why do you need to have provisions that prohibit the government from doing that which the government has no power to do?
But, Jim, you're not answering my question.
No, I am. And so, therefore, if the government doesn't have the power to prohibit a corporation from exercising free speech,
sure does.
Then, okay, under what provision the Constitution says that the government can restrict a corporation's free speech?
If the state of Tennessee or the state of Delaware or the state of Oregon, under its powers reserved to the states under the 10th Amendment, which you just said you like so much in the last hour, if that state says we don't want corporations putting tobacco ads on the air, then the answer is, could the CEO put them on the air? Yeah, maybe so. But definitely not the corporation. Let me finish, Jim.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were finished.
No, I wasn't finished. If a state makes a regulation prohibiting a corporation from doing anything, X, Y, or Z, that state has the right to do so because the corporation doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. It's a legal fiction. It's a creation of the state.
Let me make my point,
and then I'll happily let you finish.
I thought you were done.
No. Now let me finish. Every corporation in the United States of America is a legal fiction, is a creation of the state, is incorporated under the laws of a state. It exists by virtue of the state giving it that right to exist, and that state has the right to say, you know what, you no longer exist. Because that is the state, and the Constitution can't prohibit it. Now, I'm not arguing over the wisdom of this. I'm not arguing over the wisdom of this, but I'm saying that the corporation has no constitutional rights, and you can't find me anywhere in the Constitution which says it does.
I disagree with you. Can you and Mark form a an organization called call it Mark Jim, and we want to put an ad on the television saying that George Bush is a no good bum. Do we have a right to do that?
We have that right as individuals.
Okay.
And clearly
no,
together
we form a group. And I form a group, and the group.
If it's a group that you and I fully control, sure.
What?
If it's a group that you and I fully control, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Suppose we have 10 other people join us in that group. Can we still do it?
And all 10 agree to do it? Sure.
No. Suppose all 10 don't agree, but they all 10 do agree to join our organization.
I don't think you can take somebody's money against their will and use it for things they don't want to use it for.
Against their will. Everybody voluntarily joins this organization, and the organization chooses to spend, votes to, through it, whatever its bylaws, whatever it is, votes to spend the money to run that ad about what a bum George Bush is. Do we have a right to do that?
I think I have the right to take my money back from that organization if they run that ad. But you don't have that right in a corporation now, do you? The point is corporations are not associations.
Now, who doesn't have the right to take their money out of a corporation?
Based on their political thing? No.
On anything.
Okay, I want my original...
Shareholders, employees...
And get my money back?
The corporation.
No, corporations... So I put in $100 in a corporation, I buy one share, the share's gone down to $50, I should be able to get my original $100 back. Is that what you're saying, Jim?
I didn't say that.
No, I know.
I voluntarily chose to buy stock in that corporation. You could say, I won't join any corporation that spends money on political advertising.
No, see, Jim, but you're arguing policy.
You could say, I'll buy stock in it. You voluntarily, freely chose...
Jim, you're arguing policy. Can you agree with me?
Silence one side in the political debate.
I thought you were a textualist. Let me just see if you can agree with me. The word corporation isn't in the Constitution. Can you agree with me there?
Yes.
Okay. And that corporations, apart from individual people, individual people have all the rights in the Constitution. They are persons. But corporations do not have any rights as corporations.
No, I would argue
under the Constitution.
You can't suppress individual rights in the name of suppressing a corporate rights when it's actually individual
rights.
Fine. That's
fine. But corporations, let's see if we can just have an agreement here before we go to the break. That corporations, as corporations, not as individuals, we can argue about all the policy here. But corporations do not have constitutional rights. They belong to individuals who can exercise them, and we can argue about how they exercise them. But corporations per se have no constitutional rights.
I don't feel comfortable to answer it, but in the context you're putting it, it's clear.
Do pigs have constitutional rights?
If you suppress the right of the corporation to exercise free speech, you're really suppressing the rights of the individuals who make up that corporation.
We can argue about that. We can argue about that, but the corporations per se have no constitutional rights. We'll be right back, and I want to take your calls too. 877-528-8255, 877-528-TALK. I want to get to some other provisions, and I want to tell you how Scalia is a hypocrite back after this.
I'm sure you've heard the saying, when you get to the end of your rope, tie a knot in it and hang on. Margie Garrison was at the end of her rope. At the young age of 28, she was told she would be in a wheelchair in about 5 years. And then, when she just couldn't go on any longer, she met a doctor who said to her, "Margie, arthritis is the easiest disease there is to cure." Now, can you imagine Margie's joy after 43 years and thousands of dollars of doctor bills and pain medications that didn't work? Learn the whole story online at healthstarproducts.com. That's H-E-A-L-T-H, healthstarproducts.com. It's guaranteed or your money back, and you have a full year to decide. Look it up online for yourself at HealthStar, H-E-A-L-T-H, HealthStarProducts.com, and find out if what worked for Margie Garrison will work for you.
What some people are saying about your morning with Jim Harrington and friends.
Good morning, this is Homer J. Simpson, and I really love listening to Your Morning with Jim Harrington and friends.
But I love donuts more, so woo-hoo!
You'll love us with donuts or anything else you're having for breakfast. Your Morning with Jim Harrington and friends, right here.
6 to 10 Eastern Time on the Talkstar Radio Network.
When I'm under...
I'm weightless, floating away, and all I think about is doing it again.
Michael Swan is under the influence of his volunteer swim coach. Spending a little time coaching, he helps Michael stay off drugs. Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer. Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The president, in an hour and a half, will name a new Supreme Court justice. And Jim Greenfield of the Jim Greenfield Show and I are talking about how we interpret the Constitution, the kind of justice we'd like to see. And both of us would like to see a justice who adheres to the text of the Constitution. But Jim cares more about some texts than others, and I'm focusing on other texts. I don't think corporations are anywhere in the Constitution, and therefore I don't think they have any constitutional rights. That's one thing I've mentioned. Another thing is I think that everyone has equal protection under the laws. That includes men, women, people of all races, people of all sexual orientations. The Constitution doesn't discriminate, even if the founders themselves did discriminate. And I want to ask you on this question, Jim, about the question of original intent. The authors of the 14th Amendment, one of my favorite amendments, the one that provides equal protection under the laws, post-Civil War amendment, they also provided funding for the District of Columbia schools. And what they did in the District of Columbia schools is they segregated. They put the blacks in one school and the whites in another school. Clearly, the same Congress that passed the 14th Amendment also supported segregation. Now, it's my view that the text, equal protection under the laws, trumps original intent, even if they believed that somehow separate but equal was equal. We, in an evolving nation, understand that when you put people in separate categories, as in fact, there was a wonderful psychologist that talked about the harm in the Brown versus Board of Education case, that you even had black children preferring white dolls over black dolls because of the harm of the separate but equal. We understand now what they didn't understand in 1868, that separate is inherently not equal. And so I think the language, equal protection of the laws, required the Brown versus Board of Education decision, even though the original drafters supported segregation. I want to know if you agree.
Okay, now let me understand this, because I'm not as familiar with the history of this as you are.
Okay.
You're saying that the same year that Congress passed the 14th Amendment, that they also created a segregated school system, that was segregated by law in Washington, D.C.?
They appropriated money for a system that was segregated by law in Washington, D.C., that had been segregated by law, and they didn't change that segregation.
They didn't change the segregation, but did they actually pass a law requiring the school to be segregated?
There was a law on the D.C. books requiring it to be segregated. It's a good question of whether they reauthorized that law in 1868 or not, but they certainly did nothing to stop the segregation.
And the amendment was passed in 1868 also?
Yes.
Okay, but I think what I'm the question I'm raising here, it introduces a doubt as to whether it would have been their intent to actually promulgate segregated schools.
They could have stopped it.
If that were clearly the case, you'd certainly have an interesting question.
Just to be clear, as you know, Jim, but for our listeners, the District of Columbia, particularly in those days and to some extent still today, is entirely under the control of Congress. If the Congress that passed the 14th Amendment had wanted to prohibit segregation in the District of Columbia, there's no question they had the power and authority to do so, and they didn't.
Well, that may be, but you'd have to raise the question if you're going to get into the original intent notion and actually try to get into the minds of those members of Congress, whether they were consciously making a decision at that point that they wanted to promulgate segregation, or whether they were just voting a funding bill and nobody even brought up the subject, they weren't even thinking about it.
Well, they said they weren't thinking about it. They lived in D.C.
Amendments are ratified by have to be ratified by the state, so you also have to look at the intent of the state legislatures when they ratify these amendments. And what was their intention?
Well, they had segregation everywhere, Jim.
All those different people who voted for these amendments.
Jim, in 1868, to my knowledge, every state in the United States had segregated schools. But that has changed over time.
I don't think that's right.
There were some universities that allowed African Americans in. Harvard, in fact, was one of them.
I don't think the northern states had legally segregated schools.
I think they did. I think they did, but you know what? We'll have to check on that and get back. That's a factual question.
I've never heard that before,
we'll get back to that, and we'll also get back to your calls.
Can I ask you a question?
Wait, we're going to break.
We
can, but we're going to break. So if you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-528-8255. We appreciate your calls. Agree, disagree with Jim or me, or tell both of us we're wrong. You're free to do so right after this.
This is Newsbreak. President Bush has found the person he wants to replace retiring U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. He'll tell the country who it is at 9 Eastern Time tonight. The president's announcement will be carried live on many of these USA Radio Network affiliate stations. Hurricane Emily is about 160 miles southeast of Brownsville, Texas, moving toward the Gulf Coast at 12 miles an hour. Emily's eye should strike south of the Rio Grande early tomorrow. Pakistan says it arrested several suspected Taliban officials in a raid near the Afghan border. There are reports that Taliban chief Mullah Omar's key deputy was one of those arrested. A database containing the records of more than a 250,000 applicants to the University of Southern California has been hacked. USC says the breach exposed dozens of records to prying eyes. On Wall Street today, the Dow closed up 72 points. The Nasdaq gained 28. More news at usaradio.com.
Would you like to own your own business and enjoy financial independence? For as little as $13,995, Transnet Wireless can show you how to capitalize on the exploding public internet market. There is no technical knowledge required. You get everything you need to own and operate your own business. Call 1-800-928-1475. This amazing Wi-Fi internet system provides high-speed wireless internet access for up to 100 users at the same time. You simply receive a monthly check for all the wireless revenue generated at your location. Users without a wireless device can access the internet and their email directly from the machine, payable by cash or credit card. There is unlimited income potential. Call now for your video and information package. 1-800-928-1475. Prime locations are available now. Call 1-800-928-1475.
I'm Joe Graydon, and this is our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network. To prevent osteoporosis, women have been told to increase calcium, magnesium, and vitamin D intake. They're also told to get weight-bearing exercise. New research suggests that postmenopausal women benefit from strength training as well. The more weight they lifted, the stronger their hip bones. A well-balanced strength training program combined with walking or other aerobic exercise is a sensible approach to preventing osteoporosis.
How common is sexual dysfunction in women? Prior research suggested that over 40% of women have difficulty with sex at some point in their lives, but a new survey from the Kinsey Institute suggests that sexual problems are less widespread than that. 24% of the women questioned in this survey expressed dissatisfaction with their love lives. While it's still a common problem, it may not be quite as bad as it seems. This is Terry Graydon with the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am debating fellow talk show host and fellow lawyer Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show right here on the Talk Radio, the TalkStar Radio Network. We've got our constitutions in hand, well worn, I'm sure, and we're doing battle on the question of what should be the judicial philosophy of the next judicial nominee. The president will announce him or her in an hour and a half. But what's interesting is that we seem to agree on the principles, but disagree on their application. So what else is new, right? We both strongly adhere to the text of the Constitution. I was very surprised and pleased to see that Jim Greenfield agreed with me that we have no right to go to war unless Congress declares war, absent, you know, an immediate response, say, within a day or two that may be necessary. But in general, like a nuclear response, you know, I could maybe buy that. But in general, like the Iraq War, the Vietnam War, you got to declare war. And lo and behold, Jim agreed with me that it's unconstitutional all these years.
Let me ask something, Mark.
Yeah.
A little earlier in the show,
yeah,
you were arguing that corporations have no constitutional rights.
Right. They have legal rights, but not constitutional rights.
Do you think that labor unions have constitutional rights?
To the extent that they are individual rights, yes. To the extent that they're rights as an entity, no.
Well,
we'd have to go over specifics.
The way you're applying this, would you be imposing some limits on the power of corporations to participate in the political process, and not impose the same limits on labor unions?
I wouldn't, but that's a question of policy, and we can get into that and argue another day.
Constitutional law.
Oh, constitutional law. I do think there's a bit of a difference, and that labor unions vote one person, one vote on who their leadership is. Corporations do not vote one person, one vote. They vote one share, one vote. They are inherently undemocratic, whereas labor unions are inherently democratic. So I think there's a much stronger argument to be made that a labor union is an association of persons, whereas a corporation is a legal fiction. But these are distinctions that I don't know that we want to get into. I mean,
I think it's hair splitting. I mean, the bottom line is that as a practical matter, if you were to follow your notion,
I don't know that constitutionally labor unions have power,
have constitutional rights, and corporations don't. You would have to be consistent, say that other organizations also don't have constitutional rights, and the net effect of that would be, I think, to impose unprecedented new limits on all of our constitutional rights, because all of us participate in some kind of organization or other. And if you start restricting the constitutional rights of organizations, I think the net effect is that you're also restricting the rights of individuals who participate in those organizations, whatever kind of organization.
Let me be clear.
Corporation or otherwise.
Let me be clear, and I will give you a constitutional text to back it up. The First Amendment gives the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. To the extent that people join together for a political cause, and corporations are not about political causes, they're about making money. I agree the NRA is a join together for political cause. I don't support their agenda, but they do. The ACLU certainly is. And to a large extent, and this is where it gets tricky, labor unions are. But I don't think corporations are banding together for political influence. That's not in their charter. They're supposed to be there to make money.
I think that all you're really doing is choosing sides.
The right of the people peaceably to assemble. Is a corporation assembly of people?
All you're trying to do is weaken the power of corporations because you prefer other
No. I haven't even argued over what is the proper role of corporations. I'm just arguing there's no constitutional rights for it.
Look, if corporations, I think that
a state could do whatever they want.
I think you would find, if you were to study it, that if corporations, you know, you say their purpose is to make money, I think you would find, if you look into it, that 98% of the money that corporations spend to influence political outcomes is for the purpose of making money. They want to support politicians.
Yes, I know, and it's legalized bribery.
But Jim,
you're getting off topic here.
To succeed in the marketplace.
Jim, I will do this. I promise you, on some debate Tuesday, we will have a full debate on the power and influence of corporations. I look forward to that debate. I really want to have it. But because I actually think they're abusing their power. But my point is not about policy here. If a state wants to give corporations rights, the state has the right to do so under the 10th Amendment. All I'm saying is they don't have constitutional rights because there's simply no provision in this delegated powers to give it to them.
If you're going to take that position, you're going to have to be consistent. You're going to have to say that no other organization has constitutional rights either.
Well, sure, they do. They do when it's
impact will be that all of us
Have
our rights reduced,
Jim,
because
Jim,
we won't be able to use organizations to express
Jim,
our political
a
views.
A political organization is expressly protected under the First Amendment, which gives, quote, the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. What is the ACLU? The American Civil Liberty. You're interrupting me, Jim. I didn't interrupt you on your show. Jim, I didn't interrupt you on your show. Let me make my point, and then I'll give you your time. All right? The First Amendment, I'll repeat myself, gives the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. What is the American Civil Liberties Union, if not people peaceably assembling and petitioning the government for a redress of grievances? That's exactly what it is.
Well, would you say that, therefore, that there's a right of association?
I think there is a right of association.
And a constitutional right.
I do. In fact, I support the Boy Scouts' opinion, even as I detest and disagree with what the Boy Scouts are doing. I do think they have a right to be bigots, just like the Ku Klux Klan has a right to be bigots.
Well, then I give you credit for that.
Yeah. But state governments also have the right to punish the Boy Scouts for their bigotry. Absolutely. Not by banning them, but by prohibiting, allowing them on schoolyards and everything like that. Absolutely. That's free speech fighting free speech.
Well,
you agree with me?
I don't know about that.
Well, wait, do you agree with me a state can prohibit...
If they're allowing other organizations, then I would think you'd say, well, you know, you've the equal treatment under the law.
Well, no.
You can't discriminate.
There is...
They're entitled to equal protection
yes,
of the law.
Yes,
yes.
Fair enough, Jim. Let me make a distinction here. There's a difference between what's called a public forum in the law, where everyone is free to come in and state their views. For example, anyone was allowed to dedicate a highway. The Ku Klux Klan wanted to dedicate a highway, and the state had to give them the right to do it because everyone else was allowed to do it. There's a difference between that, and also whether it's religious clubs or the Gay Straight Alliance or any other group that wants to meet on school grounds. Even Ku Klux Klan, and the students have the right to protest that. But all of that's one thing. But it's another thing to give money, some state governments give money to the Boy Scouts, and I think they have every right to turn off the spigot.
Give money to the Boy Scouts or to anybody else.
Right. And they have the right to do it based on their views. They have the right to say we're not going to support this organization based on their views.
Well,
you agree?
As long as you've got them giving out money, you're going to get into these kind of issues, just like with the federal government. If they're funding money for the arts, they're going to fund money for some artwork or so-called arts that some people are going to find offensive.
Right.
So the solution is that they don't fund anything.
No, I think the state has every right to fund organizations and based on majority views.
Does the federal government have a right to fund artwork, so-called artwork that consists of a cross in urine?
I think it's an extremely bad – that one's different because that one is anti-religious. And you could argue perhaps that example you could argue is actually an attack on religion. And I don't think government has the right to fund an attack on religion any more than it has the right to fund an establishment of religion. And when we come back after break, I want to give an example of precisely – The free exercise of religion, where, you may be surprised to find out, I believe that religious people in this country should have more rights than Justice Antonin Scalia is willing to give them. I'm going to talk about a dialogue I had in public with Justice Scalia precisely on this issue right after we come back from break.
They're always talking about the number of people without health insurance, but what about those without dental coverage? If you're self-employed, retired, or your employer just doesn't provide dental insurance, there is an $11.95 a month solution that saves you up to 30%, 50%, and even 60% on dental services. And because this isn't insurance, there are no turndowns, no claim forms, no waiting periods, no runaround. And this nationwide program covers cleaning, restorations, and cosmetic dentistry. Get the whole story online. You don't have to talk to anyone if you don't want to. There's even a form to email to get a list of all the providers in your area. Go to www.1195dental.com. You type in the numbers 1195 followed by the word dental, dental.com. 1195dental.com is here to help. And check out our low prices for family memberships. Say, do you or a member of your family suffer from acne? Do you take prescription drugs and get little or no relief? Is your skin always dry and itching and peeling due to the side effects of chemicals and drugs? Do you have trouble looking in the mirror and being happy with what you see? Do you avoid going out in the world due to your acne? Are you spending ridiculous amounts of money with little or no results? Well, you may find relief. Relief is available to most sufferers online at healthstarproducts.com. It's guaranteed, or you get your money back, and you've got 90 days to decide. Look it up for yourself online at healthstarproducts, H-E-A-L-T-H, healthstarproducts.com. Go to www.healthstarproducts.com and find out about the acne program. Find out if it works for you or a member of your family. If it doesn't, you get your money back.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show, and I are having a discussion about constitutional philosophy. The president will name a Supreme Court justice in a little over an hour to replace Sandra Day O'Connor. We're talking about the kind of justice we want. And I'm really glad that before the break, Jim started to move the conversation on to the topic of religion, because I have a story to tell about a public discussion I had with Antonin Scalia, Justice Antonin Scalia. When I was in Yale Law School, he came and spoke before us. He was not well appreciated by the students, but he seemed to relish the exchange of views. And at the time, he'd just given a decision on what's now known as the peyote case. It's a case where you have Native Americans who used a hallucinogenic drug called peyote in their religious ritual. And there was no question that these were legitimate Native Americans, that this was, in fact, a religious practice that predated the United States of America. This wasn't some newfangled, you know, hey, dude, let's get stoned, we'll pretend to be Indians kind of thing. No one disputed that these were legitimate people with legitimate religious practice. And Scalia came down and said a state could ban peyote, the hallucinogenic substance, because he said that any time a law is neutral with regard to religion, then it doesn't matter what effects it has on religion. Another example would be the case where they forced the Weinberger case, where they forced a Jewish man in the military who wanted to wear a head covering, as is traditional under Orthodox Jewish law, and they said they have to remove it for a military regulation. Now, I happen to think that's too strict. I happen to think that the First Amendment, which says Congress not only shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, but can't prohibit the free exercise of religion, I think it should give way when it's not doing any great harm. I think it's a balancing test. Obviously, if the religion throws virgins into pits, we're not going to allow that. But I wasn't willing to accept Scalia's rule that any time you say neutrally we believe in this neutral principle, no drugs, you can ban religion. I thought the religion had to give some leeway. So that's the context. So I asked Justice Scalia in a public question. I asked him, if you passed a law that said you can't discriminate on the basis of sex, like Title VII, that if that could constitutionally be applied to the Catholic Church. I knew that Justice Scalia was a good Catholic, and he would not like the United States requiring the Catholic Church to have women priests as well as male priests. And he said, correctly, that Title VII exempts religious institutions. Title VII is that law. And I said, you're right, Justice Scalia. But if another Congress comes along and removes that exemption and applies Title VII, this anti-discrimination law, to everybody, including religions, you would agree that the Constitution doesn't stop that. Because you said, neutral principle, anti-discrimination, we can force the Catholic Church to have women priests. And he gave a long pause, and then he said, I'll get back to you on that, and everyone cheered in the audience. The point is that Scalia is a hypocrite. He claims to have these neutral principles, but in a case where it harms his own religion, Catholicism, he doesn't fall for it. Yeah, when it harms some foreign religion, Native Americans, people he doesn't care about, he's willing to push their rights down their throat, but not when it came to his own religion. Jim, I don't know if you have a comment on that.
Well, my comment is, I don't know whether you prove that Scalia is a hypocrite or not. It's not my job to defend Antonin Scalia, as I told you. I think what all it proves is that you were so thoughtful that you presented him a question that he hadn't thought of before, and he didn't want to just shoot from the hip. And so he said, well, I'll get back to you. I'm sure he never actually got back to you.
No, he didn't.
But, going back to the peyote case,
yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would you agree that generally states have the power to prohibit mind-altering drugs?
Yes, they do, but I do think that the Constitution, which allows the free exercise of religion, has to give some leeway to a legitimate religion,
well,
and I think it's a balancing test.
So in other words, what you're saying is that the state can say peyote is illegal, except for members who are people who happen to be members of a particular religion. For them, it's legal.
Yes.
Now, how is that equal protection of the laws?
Well,
how is that consistent with equal protection laws? You are a whatever. You're a Jehovah's Witness, and Jehovah's Witnesses believe in smoking peyote. I'm a Jew, and the law says, well, you can smoke it, but Greenfield can't.
It's a fair question.
Is that what you believe in?
It's a fair question. We have a conflict of amendments. We have the First Amendment, which is the government cannot prohibit the free exercise of religion.
I see. Well,
and then you have another amendment that says...
Suppose your religion says that that you believe in, your religion believes in ritual murder.
Well, that's what I said. There have to be limits. The point is that the Constitution, when you try to apply it as a cut and dry document, sometimes it's very, very hard. Obviously, I think I don't support. I don't think it's constitutional. If a state wants to prohibit ritual murder, I think that's fine. The point is, I think it's a balancing test, and that the words free exercise have to have some meaning. They have to be taken into consideration. And you're right. You're absolutely right, Jim. There is tension between that and equal protection of the laws. I'll grant you that. Let me ask you this. The Jewish man that wanted to wear a head covering...
The right to violate other laws that, you know, that apply to everybody.
Well, so clearly you could pass a law that requires everyone not to discriminate on the basis of of sex, including the Catholic Church. Right, Jim?
Say that again.
If I passed a law tomorrow that said no business can discriminate in hiring on the basis of sex... you would agree that you could apply that constitutionally to the Catholic Church?
No, I think you raise a valid point there. I think every business should be allowed to discriminate.
No, that's not my question.
Is it constitutional? I'm saying it doesn't work.
Is it constitutional?
Nobody's allowed to discriminate on the basis of gender except the Catholic Church. They're allowed to. No, that doesn't work. Well, my position would be that the government doesn't have the right to prohibit anybody from discriminating.
Oh, you're arguing that anti-discrimination laws are unconstitutional?
You know what?
You're arguing that the 14th Amendment, which allows the government, Congress shall have the power to enforce the provisions of this article, equal protection under the laws, you don't think that gives the states the right to pass...
Look, you think that civil rights laws are unconstitutional?
Policy
preferences?
No, but let me ask you constitutionally.
Let me answer your question. In terms of my personal policy preferences, I think the laws which prohibited discrimination against black people that came around in the 1960s worked pretty well and they had a good result. However...
You think they're unconstitutional?
Well, I'm really troubled by it, and the problem is that it opened the door. Talk about a slippery slope. You start out saying, well, you can't discriminate private employers. Private businesses can't discriminate against black people. You say, okay, we're on the side of the angels here. But then you end up saying, well, they also can't discriminate on the basis of gender. They can't discriminate on the basis of age. They can't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. They can't discriminate on the basis of physical appearance. And you go down this thing and say, wait a minute, just back off. Get the government out of this. Let people decide for themselves who they're going to do business with. And you end up with a lot more freedom.
So therefore,
I think that whole notion, like I say, it started on the side of the angels, but it really ended up with a disastrous result with the government micromanaging how businesses relate to their customers and their employees.
We have to take another break, but I would submit that what you're doing is you're constantly going to the policy. We can argue about the policy. We can have a whole other show on anti-discrimination laws. But my contention is they are constitutional. I want to, because I think it's important for people to understand the difference between a wise policy decision and one that's constitutional. And I think a lot of things are constitutional, and the court should be very careful before it declares the will of the majority to be unconstitutional. When we come back, I want to talk about that great decision that violated states' rights, Bush v. Gore. Back after this.
When I do it, everything goes dark. And I feel like a different person.
Kenzie Olsen is under the influence of her community theater volunteer, helping out at an after-school theater program. She helps Kenzie stay off drugs. Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer. Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
There are times and occasions when only roses will do. Roses247.com searches rose growers all over the world for the season's very best and most special roses at the most reasonable prices. For this week's greatest selection of fresh, beautifully cultivated roses, chosen to convey just exactly the sentiment you want to express, get online to www.roses247.com. We've done all the screening and shopping for you. It's fast, easy, and safe to order online, just as hundreds of thousands do all the time. So for birthdays, anniversaries, special remembrances, or just to say you are very much loved, type in roses247.com. We're open around the clock at roses247.com. Roses say it best.
Where were you last year?
What happened to your hair?
Are you contagious? How come you're always tired?
If you think going back to school is tough for an 8-year-old, imagine doing it while recovering from cancer. CureSearch.org is a website that can help. It connects you to the doctors and scientists whose collaborative research has turned childhood cancer from a nearly incurable disease to one with an overall cure rate of 78%. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We are nearing the conclusion of a two-hour discussion I've been having with fellow talk show host Jim Greenfield on the Constitution. In a little over an hour, the president will name a new Supreme Court justice to replace Sandra Day O'Connor. And I want to tell you about a discussion I have with one of Sandra Day O'Connor's former clerks. And I'll give you his name because he told me I could. His name is Gary Francione. And Mr. Francione, who used to work for Sandra Day O'Connor, said that her decision in the Bush v. Gore decision was blatantly hypocritical. It was a violation of her state's rights views, that a state should decide these questions, and also a violation of her judicial activism views. Her own clerk called her a hypocrite, which is extremely rare for that to happen. Gary Francione, by the way, now teaches at Rutgers Law School, and he uses my analysis of the Supreme Court decision in his class. I'd like to know, just as we're concluding, Jim Greenfield, if you agree with myself and Sandra Day O'Connor's clerk that it was blatantly hypocritical of her state's rights views to not let Florida determine who won its electoral votes.
Well, Article 2 of the Constitution says that each state shall appoint, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, a number of electors, yada, yada, yada. In other words, the state is supposed to follow the law as established by the legislature of that state.
Exactly. Now,
the
federal government...
I know that you researched this, you're an expert on this. But my clear recollection, going back 4 years to when this happened, Bush v. Gore, is that what was happening there was that the some of the election officials and the Florida Supreme Court was not following the law that was established by the Florida state legislature.
You're wrong.
They were creating a constitutional crisis.
You're dead wrong.
That may have prevented the election from being decided in time for the new president to take office.
Sorry, Jim.
You had every right to step in there and say no.
No. You're dead wrong.
The laws and procedures established
you're
by your
dead,
own state legislature.
Dead wrong.
Due process.
You're dead wrong. We only got a few minutes left. The Florida law legislature says that the highest court in the land of Florida is the Florida Supreme Court. The Florida Supreme Court has every right to interpret Florida laws and the Constitution. My question is, does the federal government have any right to step in to how a state court interprets that state legislature's laws? Do you think they do?
Well, I would say that in most instances they do not, but when there's a presidential election occurring, the Constitution does give them the right to decide all cases arising under the Constitution in Article 2.
It's not a case arising under the Constitution.
So I think the Supreme Court does have the power to interpret and apply Article 2 of the Constitution, sure.
Well, you know, there's no question in my mind if the shoe were on the other foot, you would argue the other way, Jim, if it were Bush v. Gore, and Bush had won the election and Gore was being
anyway,
there.
Bush would have won anyway, as it turned out.
Well, yeah, Gore did win anyway. But it says
in Article 2...
Did
you see those articles by the newspapers?
Yes, and they all said that Gore won no matter how you count the votes, as long as you count all the votes.
Bush won no matter how you count the votes.
You're wrong, Jim, and I will bet you right on air, I will bet you $50... I will bet you $50 right here on air. I want you to take this bet.
Hold on, Jim.
I want to see if you can take this bet. $50. I will mail to you or you will mail to me. Here's the bet.
I don't know where to find the information.
I will give it to you. Here's the bet. If every vote that was cast in Florida is counted throughout the state, under any system of counting, Gore wins Florida and the election.
I'll tell you
will you take that bet? Because Matt Drudge supports my view.
I'll take the bet with this qualification. According to, if we base our determination according to a set of articles that was done by a consortium of newspapers, including the Los Angeles Times, USA Today, and the Miami Herald.
Terrific.
There's some articles about this.
I just won $50.
If according to those articles, you're right, I'll pay you $50.
Terrific.
Right, you pay me
$50. Let me tell you where the caveat is so you know where the bodies are buried, Jim. I said if you count every vote. cast in Florida.
What do you mean by count every vote?
Every vote that was cast. Under any system of counting.
I'm just saying that those newspapers, which are left-leaning newspapers,
Time is up, but here's the answer. What the newspapers said is that if you count every vote in Florida, under any system of counting, Gore wins. However, if you only count the votes in four selected counties, then Bush may win under some circumstances. But if you count the votes throughout the state that were not counted, all 180,000 votes, Gore won, and that's why Sandra Day O'Connor was a hypocrite. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow.
Like most parents, you probably see your child as the typical smart, well-adjusted kid.
Camouflage. C-A-M-O-U-F-L-A-G-E. Camouflage.
Well, your child might not be as well-adjusted as you think.
Issues. I-S-S-U-E-S. Issues.
And if you knew there was somebody in particular...